and welcome to the Stockyard Sessions podcast, brought to you by Atlas Ag, the team behind Atlas Carbon and Meyer Grazing. This is episode one, The Founder, and I will introduce my guest for this episode shortly, founder and CEO of Atlas Ag, Ashley Silver. But first, this is a new podcast covering all things soil organic carbon, grazing and pastures. And now is the right time to be having these discussions. At present, the recommendations of the Chubb Review are yet to be implemented. The soil carbon method is under review. The integrated farm and land management method is still being developed, and new methods under the nature repair market are emerging. At this juncture, does a recently re-elected Labour government have a chance to get it right for primary producers who are critical to unlocking extensive decarbonisation for Australia? So lots to cover. With that in mind, welcome to the podcast, Ashley Silver. Welcome, Ash.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
I think this episode has two key elements. I want to talk about Atlas Carbon, soil health, productivity, carbon sequestration, but I also want to hear about you and your career, working in places like Uganda and Nicaragua, obviously time in the US. To start, why agriculture? Why soil carbon? Why combating climate change? What's got you to the point that you're at today, Ash?
Well, Matt, as you say, my career experience has been pretty broad, working across various continents with different people in different industries. And when I think about, you know, what can I do in my career to make a big difference for the world and for the landscapes that I love, I think livestock producers are central to solving some of the problems that we're facing today, from desertification, food insecurity, weather volatility, and impacts on the climate.
So this isn't just a career for you then, it's a passion as well.
Absolutely.
Does Australian agriculture have a strong story to share in your view?
Absolutely. That's why we're here. So Australian agriculture is seen as one of the most innovative regions for the ag industry globally, compared to places like North America, the US. Australia's agriculture industry is far more, I would say, commercial and less dependent on government support mechanisms. Because of that weather volatility that I spoke of, pretty harsh climate here in Australia, Australian farmers, producers, cropping, you name it, have really been driving a lot of innovation in adaption to what we see happening today from weather and climate.
So what is the opportunity to combat climate change through livestock grazing in particular, Ash?
Well, I would say it's twofold. And most importantly, it's the fact that livestock producers globally control, manage, own a huge portion of the world's arable land, second only to forests. And so if you want to make a difference in landscapes, in climate, in nature, working with livestock producers is paramount. And then secondly, because livestock producers control such a vast amount of our land globally, the way that they raise their livestock is critical. If you raise livestock appropriately, you can improve water retention in soils, which helps with climactic events. It helps to improve biodiversity. And that soil is what produces so much of the food that humans depend on for life. So not to get kind of too excited about all of this, but they are just so crucial to our ecosystems, to the vast majority of the land on Earth.
Too often soil organic carbon is caught up in criticism and debate with varying views and opinions. What's your view on that debate, and where do you stand?
I mean, just with any emerging science, I think that debate is critical. You know, a lot of soil data and research that's been done up to this point in time has only been looking at the top 15, maybe 30 centimeters of soil. This was primarily research to look at the impacts of chemical inputs and ways to just push short-term levels of production in farming and cropping. But now that we understand the crucial centrality of soil to human life, we're starting to understand soil at depth. And so there's very little research of soil at depth, very little data. And when I talk at depth, I'm talking down to a meter and beyond. And when we start to understand soil, not just in that first 15 centimeters, but down far deeper, we see the value that it delivers to biodiversity, to health, to water cycles, so on and so forth. And so I think the emerging debates that we see are simply because there is so little data. But I would say counter to that, there's a lot of hope as we see some of the early signs and early research emerging now that we're starting to get more soil data coming through.
How do you get more soil data coming through? Is it as simple as you need more farmers to be taking part in soil carbon projects?
Well, I mean, I think that is a really great way to support the investment in that research, because for strong soil carbon projects, you want to be measuring soils at depth. And so, you know, a lot of the research and outcomes we are seeing are from some of those early soil carbon projects that are sampling down to a meter and have some really exciting outcomes that we're seeing for soil carbon sequestration at depth.
Is a soil carbon project for everyone, or are there some producers that you work with where you would recommend not undergoing a project?
Soil carbon is important for all producers, but doing a soil carbon project might not be the right option for all producers. So as we know, building soil carbon improves the health of your soils, your water retention, your productivity, biodiversity. But when you come to thinking about whether you want to monetize that carbon via a soil carbon project, that's where there is more nuance. So when we look at viability of a soil carbon project under the Australian method, it's important to ensure that that property has a certain soil carbon sequestration potential. So that's what kind of uplift that property can achieve on a per hectare basis, as well as the size of that property to help cover some of the fixed costs of doing a soil carbon project. And so while soil carbon is something we want all producers thinking about and working to increase, registering and monetizing via a soil carbon project certainly is not right for everyone. And so that's why we think at Atlas Carbon, it's really important for producers to do their due diligence, make sure that they have a strong ROI if they're getting into a carbon project.
And how do you do that then? How do you ensure that due diligence? Do you work alongside the producer in the early stages?
Yeah. Well, so at Atlas Carbon, we have a two-stage assessment process. The first is a high-level desktop assessment that we offer for free. We know producers are time poor and they want to do a back-of-the-envelope view before they spend any money, which is smart. So we'll do a desktop assessment, and then if that all looks positive, then we will go on farm. We will take soil samples, we'll spend a day or two with the producer, we'll do some mapping of their landscapes, we'll understand their grazing metrics. And so it's all quite involved because, you know, a lot of things go into the viability potential of a soil carbon project. It's grazing metrics, it's grazing history, it's land use history, it's soil type and soil health, rainfall, property size. There's a lot going into that equation that we look at before signing up for a project with a producer.
Can you just give me, finally, before we talk a bit about you, Ash, an example of a producer that you're working with who is now undergoing a soil carbon project? You know, how excited are they? What sort of work are you doing with them? What's the sort of practicalities of doing this?
Well, I would say every producer we work with is different. And so I'm excited that, you know, we have some producers that are in more dry areas that, you know, we've been working with via our SaaS solution, Maya Grazing. They really push the art of the possible from their grazing management, and they want to do more. And so they're excited to kind of show, you know, how far you can take a soil carbon project and what kind of innovations they can apply. And then we have producers who are early in their journey. They've been set stocking. They maybe have just come onto the property via a succession event, and they're looking to start something new to build their legacy, but they have a lot to learn. And so both ends of the spectrum, these producers are excited. They have their properties are at completely different levels of development. Their understanding of good grazing management are at different stages. But I think both both sides of the spectrum still. The producers we work with, they're ambitious, they are visionary, they are excited, and they're committed on what the potential for a soil carbon project could be for their business.
You're listening to the Stockyard Sessions podcast, brought to you by Atlas Ag, the team behind Atlas Carbon and Meyer Grazing. Ash, I just want to talk to you about your career, which has seen you work across the world. Let's start with Australia and what brought you here in the first place.
I originally came to Australia post doing an MBA in Europe, and I came to join a global consultancy called Boston Consulting Group. I started my work here in Australia doing a lot of strategy work with ASX 200 companies, private equity work. I was able to do a little bit in the poultry processing space, but I shifted to focus a lot on building digital ventures with corporates. And a lot of that work was on building digital tools to help with adult behavior change, decision support, metrics, and analytics. And so we like to carry on a lot of that in Maya Grazing, our farm management software here at Atlas Carbon.
Now, you've worked all around the world. Your time in Uganda really stood out to me. Tell me about what that experience was like.
Sure. So I was in Uganda when I was working in the international development space, and my area of focus was working with subsistence farmers, so far smaller scale than the producers that we work with today, and helping them to build additional revenue streams, often through tourism businesses. So a lot of agriculture production in emerging markets can lead and be right up against protected areas. And in Uganda, these were safari parks and gorilla parks. And to help these farmers have alternative means of revenue so that they weren't poaching or encroaching in these national parks, we helped them build tourism businesses that kind of complemented and supplemented their farm revenue.
How long were you there for, Ash?
I was there for a little over 4 years.
Incredible. And what was it like living there outside of work? Challenging at times? Did you miss home? You know, what are some of the emotions when you look back on that time?
No, it was wonderful. So they call Uganda the country club of Africa. It's at 1,000 meters above sea level. And so the weather is eternal spring. It's green, it's lush. The people are kind and fun and innovative. And I got to spend a lot of time out on the land, working with producers and also seeing all of the beautiful wildlife that Uganda has to offer. So fond memories. It's a beautiful, safe country. I recommend everyone go and visit it that likes land and landscapes.
Is Australia home for you now?
It is home. I came originally over 10 years ago, did a bit of a boomerang to New York and back, but am happily settled here and just looking to see what kind of impact we can have here in Australia. I love Australia as well because it has just remarkable land and landscapes. And so being able to work in the livestock industry, which controls such a significant portion of that land, is really exciting for me.
And outside of work, I know you like hiking and trekking. You've just completed a long walk. Tell me a bit about that and sort of what you do outside of work.
Sure. So the latest endeavor was doing the South Coast Trek in Southwest Tasmania. We took 9 days. So I'm a bit of a slow hiker, but covered about 120 kilometers just down in really beautiful, untouched forest area.
Fantastic. And so that's how you sort of switch off and relax a bit, is it, outside of work? That enables you to sort of wind down a bit?
Certainly. I'm a big outdoors person, so if I'm not hiking, I'm cycling or I'm swimming, going on walks, and just exploring the outdoors.
Ash, tell me about what motivates you and your career.
Well, it's funny that I work in a space that is really focused on environment and landscapes, because really at the heart of what motivates me is increasing economic opportunity for people. So that's what excites me around the work that we do with livestock producers is how it can improve their business, their economic opportunity, and the incomes that that drives to those families and those regional parts of Australia that I think need that additional injection of industry, of economic opportunity. That's what drove me to Uganda, to the work that I did early on in my career was, you know, how do you bring new economic drivers into a community, into an industry, because I think, you know, when people have that economic opportunity, the world's their oyster.
We're recording this just 2 weeks after the federal election. Not sure when people are going to be hearing it, but it's fresh in the mind at the moment. And in particular, former Agriculture Minister Murray Watt, who's now in charge of the environment portfolio. Ash, how important do you think that might be, bringing those two portfolios closer together?
Well, we certainly have high hopes that that is the case. With regard to the election, look, I think Australia has pretty consistent policy views no matter who comes into office, and that is the foundation of the safeguard mechanism, which is legislated that the top 200 largest emitters in this country are committed to reducing their emissions, and where they cannot do so, they will make up for it by purchasing high integrity, high value Australian carbon credit units from projects like the ones that we build at Atlas Carbon. So, you know, we are confident that this government will continue on with those policies and perhaps make them stronger. In order for that safeguard mechanism to work, we are counting on our new environment minister to see the crucial and central role that the agricultural and land industry will play in delivering on those ACCUs. We work in the soil carbon method, which is a pretty complex and pretty expensive method to execute. And you are asking producers to make big changes and really long-term commitments on their properties. And so we believe that this government will come in and see the potential, but also some of the barriers, and start putting more investment and providing more support and guarantees to reduce the risk so more producers can take on this commitment and sign up for soil carbon projects.
So we need faster and more decisive action then to spur on market participation. What will help producers in that area, do you think?
Well, one small project we've been doing at Atlas Carbon is in partnership with the Wilmot Cattle Company and the New South Wales government. And that is providing essentially cost share grants for producers to help cover some of the cost of their soil baselining, as well as on-farm infrastructure investment. I think more opportunities to support producers to subsidize some of those costs that they have to bear, I think will drive more urgent sign up into these projects, which we need, because actually there's a lot of methods that have been retired recently, and soil carbon can be adopted, we think, around 100 across 100 million hectares of Australia's landscapes. But it's expensive to participate. It's a big commitment. And so supporting with grants that help with that cost share could be a vital opportunity for producers and for government to spur that change.
There's a lot of debate around insets v offsets and what producers would do with any carbon credits they earn. Where do you stand on that debate?
I think that producers should be able to create carbon credits and sell them just like any other commodity on their property. Currently, when we look across industries, oil and gas, metals and mining have far outsized profit margins compared to the ag, food and retail industries here in Australia. And so I think putting a bit extra burden on those high margin industries who simply have a higher willingness and ability to pay for high value, high quality ACCUs is the way to go. Requiring a farmer today to simply give away their carbon credits to inset their livestock, so a grocer is able to say that what they're doing is carbon neutral, I think is kind of missing the point. To drive change, to drive vast amounts of transition on these farming properties is expensive. And I don't think that the average Australian consumer can bear what it would cost for their hamburger meat to be carbon neutral at this point in time. But I think the oil and gas industry has. They've had a baked-in carbon price internally for most of those organizations for over a generation. They have big budgets to buy ACCUs. And so I think we should allow producers to sell their ACCUs and their carbon credits to the highest bidder that might not be in their supply chain.
Do we need a bit more stability in both the methods and the market, just to sort of set people's minds at ease a bit here?
Having worked internationally and also understanding a lot about the voluntary carbon markets that we see abroad, we actually have a lot of stability and consistency in the Australian carbon markets. And so while I know people feel a bit nervous because carbon markets are certainly newer than cattle markets, we do have a pretty strong, stable, consistent market. Certainly, as we have changes in government, being committed and providing that certainty across industry is certainly valuable. And we have seen that happen over the past 15 years. And so I think continuing with that stability will just make us an even stronger, reliable compliance market.
Fantastic. Look, we're almost at a close. A few more questions. I'd just like to think about Atlas Carbon and what's the future for Atlas Carbon? What are your objectives as a business, Ash?
Well, our foundational objective is to do whatever we can to help producers adopt better grazing management practices because we think that's better for their profitability, it's better for the longevity of their businesses, and it's better for the health of their livestock and their landscapes. So we'll continue working with producers to adopt those practices with the additional financial support that carbon projects can deliver. We also have our grazing management software, Maya Grazing. We should be coming out with a whole new version of that product later on this year. And we are looking forward to integrating some of the other carbon methods and nature methods that the government has out. So looking at environmental plantings, avoided clearing methods, the new nature market method on trees. And who knows, maybe in the future we will have a viable method for looking at methane. But that's only if we have really well-researched approaches to addressing that.
I'm really looking forward to doing this podcast and recording more episodes over the coming weeks. There's lots to learn and lots to talk about. As part of developing and recording this podcast, I'm really looking forward to speaking to producers and going on farm. But I also want to speak to some of the Atlas Carbon team who are up and down farm drives, working hand in hand with producers to develop soil carbon projects. How important is that aspect of the Atlas Carbon business?
It is paramount. I certainly see myself as a servant leader, and Atlas is only Atlas because of the experts that we have in our team. I'd say at least a third of our team are producers themselves. They live on their own livestock properties, and they do this day in, day out. And, you know, we all say we're not experts at any given thing. We all have our experiences and we continue to invest in our knowledge. And it's what we can all do together that makes us stronger. And it gives us an ability to deliver something really special for the producers that we work with.
Fantastic. Final couple of questions. Just thinking about the wider organic carbon debate. If we are sitting here in 12 months' time, say recording this podcast again, what does good look like for you, or what would you like to see change or improved over that 12 months?
Well, I do believe we will see more soil carbon projects monetizing in the next 12 months. And so the more that we show the success of producers who have signed up early to do these projects, the better. I think we will see more evidence of soil data and that soil data at depth, where we started this conversation, to start informing people who have really only done research on those first 15 centimeters, that while there is a lot of variability at the top of these soils, there's a lot more permanence as you go down deeper in the soil.
What needs to happen in order to more effectively measure at depth?
Well, signing up for more soil carbon projects is a great place to start because then you are getting huge, huge data sets of soil at depth across the country. Being able to bring those data sets together and find a way to get the research eyes across that data and show the evidence of the power that soil has in sequestering carbon at these landscape levels.
Final question. What is your message to livestock producers?
I think carbon projects are not going away. It's a growing opportunity. I think at least doing the research, knowing your value, what your property can deliver, what the opportunity is for you, is a great place to start. There's a lot of free resources out there. There's a lot of interesting training programs happening. Atlas Carbon is running lots of webinars just to give you some background information. Talk to people who you know in your community that are doing it. And certainly, we're always happy to chat. So reach out. You can get a free cost-benefit report. You can speak to one of our advisors. Do your research.
It's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you. Thank you for taking the time out of your very busy schedule. And thank you again. It's been really good to catch up.
Thank you so much, Matt. Great to speak with you.
Thank you. To learn more about how Atlas Carbon helps graziers investigate their soil carbon potential, visit the Atlas Carbon website. And to learn more about how Meyer Grazing helps livestock producers make great grazing decisions, visit the Meyer Grazing website.